This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or online store. To create your own space, visit squarespace.com and save 10% by using offer code TREK10.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow Standard Orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take a seat.
I say.
It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends. Welcome to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's newest series about Star Trek's oldest series, the original series. This is a show where we dive into the characters, concepts, cliches, and other things that don't start with C about the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru, and I'm the TOS editor for the network, and with me today is Mike from Commentary Track Stars. Hey, Mike.
How's it going?
How was your week?
It was pretty good. There was lots of baseball on TV, so, you know.
Oh, I mean, oh boy.
Yeah.
Sports.
Playoff baseball. It's great. I know you're a fan.
I love sports. It's my favorite.
Yeah.
Well, today, thankfully, we're not talking about sports. I don't have to fake my way through it. Star Trek was unique in that most shows have a pilot, and the network will throw money at them and say, show us what you can do based on your script. And then they'll make something and they'll say yay or nay. Star Trek was unique in the fact that they saw it, they liked the possibilities, but they wanted to see if they could do... What is that you said that you read in Cushman's book?
They wanted to make sure that they could do everything they said they could. You know, where as most shows have a pretty standard formula, Star Trek was big. You know, there's lots of different types of shows that Star Trek does, so they wanted to make sure that they could do the action as well as the thoughtful stuff. I guess.
So they went back and they shot Where No Man Has Gone Before. Originally, they were asked to produce three scripts. So they produced Mud's Women, The Omega Glory, and Where No Man Has Gone Before. And wisely, NBC said, why don't you try Where No Man Has Gone Before and not the one with the futuristic pimp or the one where Kirk ends up reading the Declaration of Independence. So...
You know, I mean, the thing about Star Trek being so big is that you can go in some crazy directions, and if people don't know what the baseline is, then it might be problematic.
I'm impressed that NBC read the script for The Omega Glory and didn't say, you know what, forget this. This Star Trek show, no. That's just stupid. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Omega Glory, worse than Spock's brain. I'll say it now.
See, I don't have a problem with The Omega Glory, really. I mean, I'll never watch it unprompted, but no, I mean, that episode is very watchable.
So, they started with The Cage, starring Jeffrey Hunter as Captain Christopher Pike. The episode starts kind of in the middle of it, like, well, kind of at the end of a previous episode, which is what I like about both pilots, is they both kind of, we're already together, we're already friends. It's not like, let's get the band together for the first time. Both pilots have a group of people who've been together before on their way to their next mission. The whole thing is in media res. They've got nothing's explained by a scroll. It's just they've been beat up. They've had a lot of missions previous. They're on their way to get some rest and to get some people some medical treatment. And they get a distress signal from Talos IV, which they ignore for the first 10 minutes, which I appreciate that they just kind of, well, there's the main plot over there, but we're going to stay over here for a bit and talk about our problems with the doctor slash bartender, which I kind of miss. Though he's very... My problem with The Cage is that it's not very futuristic. Besides the mental powers and stuff, there's only a few shots of the ship. There's no ship problems. There's just paper. You know, the computer prints out just a piece of paper, which is obviously just an extra shoving paper through a slot on the set. When Pike's walking to his quarters, there's just people wearing 60s outfits walking down the hallway. There's little futuristicness. The doctor knocks on the door. Like, he doesn't ring a doorbell or anything. It's just he knocks on the sliding door before they let him in. It's really, this is a show set on a starship. but not necessarily futuristic. I don't know. It's hard to explain. Do you get that idea, maybe?
I hadn't really thought about that, but I guess I can kind of see it. I'm wondering if there might be three things at play there. One is maybe they didn't think about a lot of the futuristic stuff yet. Two is maybe they didn't have the money for a lot of it yet. And three mm-hmm. is maybe they were sort of overcompensating for their general premise of this being a science fiction show, which was essentially just a regular drama in the future. You know, in a lot of ways, I see Star Trek as being sort of the 60s equivalent to what Battlestar Galactica is today, you know, where it's really like a modern drama, but in the future. And, you know, if you look at like what Roddenberry had been talking about and like the stuff that they kept on trying to pound into people's heads and everything at the time, it's like, this isn't, you know, Lost in Space. This isn't Flash Gordon, where it's like crazy things going on all the time and laser gun. Well, I guess there are laser guns, but you know what I mean. You know, this is very much based in science. It's science fiction, not, you know, not space fantasy. So maybe some of that stuff is just trying to say, like, you know what, it is going to be pretty much the same as it is now, just on a spaceship in the future.
Okay, I can get behind that.
But I think there are probably some other factors at play as well.
Yeah, I'm sure it was just, well, we don't have any more budget for costumes, so we'll just, right. You guys, you look good.
Yeah.
And the 60s futuristic was kind of the style at the time. Mm-hmm. The 50s, 60s a futuristic look. The you know, house of tomorrow that does all of your laundry for you. They're dreaming, you know, by 1970 we'll have all this amazing technology. So I'm guessing they thought that they reached maybe the peak of technology. You know, well, we've got printers that print out paper. You know, right. It can't get any better than that.
No.
Though Spock does use motion control to control his computer at times.
That's true.
Which is very, like, Kinect-y.
Yeah, my wife does that with her phone now. I always make fun
really?
Of her. Yeah. Yeah.
Why?
She's like, well, this way, if I'm eating, I don't have to wipe off my hands. I'm like, okay. If it makes you happy.
Another thing is that about the cage is that all the technology that they do use is a big deal. Like, let's go to warp. Warp! And yeah. There's like, you know, the lights start flashing and everybody's moving in kind of slow motion, kind of like motion picture, I guess.
They play the theme song. And
they play right? the theme song, and there's stars overlaid over them.
And there's the lap dissolves. Yeah, that is the thing that really sticks out to me is the dissolves. Like, look at how awesome this is. It's so awesome.
Space.
We've got to show you two things at the same time because there's just so much things.
And then transporters, thankfully, that was kept to a minimum, but there's a lot of transporting one person at a time instead of the group of people. Like, everybody's about to beam down and just the women disappear and Spock freaks out because he doesn't have a character. It is kind of disappointing. Like, Pike is the only person, I think, who really gets character and motivation. I know it's only one episode, but looking at, like, Where No Man Has Gone Before, we get a lot of characters pretty much fleshed out right at the beginning, within the first 60 seconds even. Mm-hmm. You understand Kirk and Spock. But with Pike, you learn Pike through the episode, but number one, you don't know anything about her. Spock, you know even less of. He's an alien, but he acts just like everybody else, so there's nothing that sets him apart except for his pointed ears.
Well, you can kind of see on like a surface level what they were intending to do. You know, basically, I think they were doing the same thing that they ended up doing in the original series, which is have the id, ego, super ego thing going on. But instead of it being with Spock, it was going to be with number one. She's the highly logical individual and everything like that. And even though she doesn't really do anything, you do see her character come through, which is basically Spock's character. And Spock, he's got his gimmick. He's an alien. And the Doctor is, you know, gets a few moments because he's basically the guy that Pike bounces his stuff off of, you know?
Yeah.
So you can kind of see, even though none of them are, well, I guess even though none of them get to flesh out their own characters, they all have like a gimmick or something or a trait which helps to inform us as to what Pike's character is.
And what the show, given, you know, with Hunter and all those actors, what it could have been.
Yeah.
It would have been similar to TOS.
Yeah.
But with Majel Barrett in a major role, which would be kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
The few things that Majel gets to do in this episode are pretty incredible. Just her reaction shots is all we need. It's just her reaction shots to, well, I don't know if I can get used to a woman on the bridge. And she just spins around.
Yep.
And he's like, well, you don't count. And she just glares at him.
She does seem like kind of a badass in this episode. I would have liked to have seen what they would have done with her. But at the same time, I think the idea of getting rid of her and melding that character's traits with Spock was ultimately much more beneficial.
Yeah, I would have loved to have been there when Gene had to go to Majel and say, sorry, honey, we've got to... They made me make a choice. Either the woman goes or the alien goes. So I'm going to combine your character and Nimoy's character and give it to me? No, 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 no. You're going to... Maybe I'll let you be, you know, a nurse or something randomly. I don't want to make it look like I'm showing favoritism, but I also don't want to have to pay you money.
I don't think he cared about making it look like he was showing favoritism. I think everyone knew, and he's just like, you know, who cares? I'm the boss.
But the cage, when I watch it now, after watching like the first couple seasons of Next Generation, it feels very like a Next Generation episode to me. It's very slow and methodical, and there's a lot of conference room scenes. I mean, I know we joke about that, but there are a lot of scenes where they're sitting down like, well, Captain's kidnapped. What are we going to do about that? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess we could, like, shoot phasers at it. Okay.
Yeah, like, the network's comments about it being too cerebral, I think, are... Well, I mean, I don't think it's too cerebral, but at the same time, I see what they're talking about. You know, that there is a lot of contemplative, you know, character scenes where they're just sitting around talking about lots of stuff, you know, philosophy and strategy and the human condition and everything like that. And if you're billing this as, you know, a space Western, I can see how that would be kind of a turnoff to some people.
Yeah, it's definitely not Wagon Train to the Stars at this point. It's more what Next Generation is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great that Gene had the idea and he set out to do it and he didn't pull any punches. He was like, this is the kind of show I want to make. I can do other kind of shows, but this is what I want the basis to be. This is what I want to lead with. Even if they didn't let him lead with it, they did let him cut it in half and use it as a two-part episode. I don't even know if people were doing two-part episodes in the 60s.
Two-part episodes I don't think were really that strange, but the idea of having a show where half of it is about another cast and recycling a pilot like that is... was never done before, for sure.
And I think that's pure genius. I mean, he's got this whole show. It doesn't really fit in. Not like where No Man Has Gone Before, which it could show like as the third episode. And most people didn't even notice that McCoy wasn't there and they were wearing different uniforms and the ship looked different. But to just insert the cage in there is kind of blatant. I mean, it's a genius idea with the framing story and using the one character that was the same in them both. I have to give him a lot of respect for that, for being able to think of that and to pull it off and to save that much money. I mean, two episodes worth. Sure, there's new shuttlecraft shots, but there's really not much money spent on it. They just sat in the briefing room and watched the pilot.
You know, what's funny is that, you know, reading the Cushman book, while it's true that they saved money and there was a lot of negotiating going back and forth as to who was going to pay for what and how it's going to count in terms of the number of episodes and stuff like that, and while that was sort of the hook that Roddenberry used to get them to do it, he started pitching that like, well, we need to save money. We're almost out of money well before they had money problems during season one. He just wanted to get that out there because he was really proud of the episode itself. He wanted people to see it. And, you know, like looking at some of the memos and stuff that were going back and forth about the menagerie, like I get the impression that Roddenberry really felt that the cage and as an extension, the menagerie was kind of like his masterpiece, his baby, his personal masterpiece, you know, which I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with that.
And the moral, let's break it down. What is the moral of the story in the cage? Is it that mankind was not meant to be held captive? Is it, as Venus says, when dreams become more important than reality, you give up travel, building, and creating? Is it something about television, you think, or the holodeck? It's impressive that Roddenberry would write this about, you know, all your dreams can come true, and that's bad. All your dreams coming true is bad. And then in Next Generation, here all your dreams can come true, and it's totally awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. It does have, you know, the same themes that we see in a lot of stuff, you know, even WALL-E. And it's interesting that he would choose this for the first episode of his new futuristic science fiction show. He's basically saying, like, eventually technology is going to get to the point where we don't have to do anything. Like, we can literally sit in a chair and probably control things with our mind and everything. Well, do exactly what the Talosians do. When we reach that point, we have to be careful that we don't stop doing what it is that makes us better in the first place, you know, that made us better in the first place, that we don't settle for something which we think is you know, the peak. We need to keep on going forward. We need to keep on growing as a species. Otherwise, we might as well just die. Otherwise, that we will be in our own personal cages. You know, the Talosians are in a cage as much as the humans are.
As deep as that was, NBC wanted to see action, wanted to see fighting. They wanted to see big budget stuff. So they picked Where No Man Has Gone Before, which immediately opens up with them heading to the edge of the galaxy, and Kirk and Spock, and they're immediately establishing the fact that Spock doesn't have emotions. Oh, one of your Earth emotions, which he says with a grin, which which is weird and worries me a bit, but
it was still early on. They were still, I mean, I can forgive stuff like that because they were still trying to figure out what the character was. You know, they, none of them had done this before. We're looking at it with the hindsight of, you know, 47 years of Spock, you know?
Right.
They had like one other episode where he was completely different.
But it does at least establish the characters right away, which I appreciate more than just the focus on the captain. And they immediately go to Redwood, and they immediately start running around, and they immediately run into turbo lifts and going up and down, and it's definitely starts off more action-packed than the cage did. I'm going to start off by saying I like Where No Man Has Gone Before better. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what that says about me. I mean, I guess I always lean toward the more action-y episodes. I mean, I don't think that's a bad thing, but I also think that this episode is also fairly deep.
I would agree with that. You know, looking at it today, I was watching it and I was thinking, you know, there's really not a hell of a lot of difference between this and the cage on a tonal level or a content level or anything like that. Really, the big thing, which, you know, everyone seems to make a big deal out of every time you hear people talk about it, is like the studio wanted it to end on a big action beat. And it's like, yeah, I guess it does that, and that is a pretty big action beat, and bigger than anything that is in the cage. But aside from that, I mean, you could have stuck that at the end of the cage somehow and gotten essentially the same
That's thing. That's true.
You know?
Have him fight the little girly alien big head women. And
I mean, I don't know.
He does,
I mean,
fight one of them. It's just a very short fight.
I mean, it's contrived in Where No Man Has Gone Before, too. Kind of, you know, I mean, he's fighting this being which can control things with his mind, you know, and they do the whole thing where, you know, the kind of Return of the Jedi thing where the other godlike being, you know, fights with him with lightning bolts and takes away his powers for a split second, but then he gets him back and Kirk's still able to beat him somehow. That's a little weird.
Yeah, I've never understood that. He's unstoppable unless his eyes aren't glowing, and then it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. There's a lot of sitting around and talking. What are we going to do about Gary? You know, Gary's going to be in trouble. I mean, there's a lot of conference room scenes, but I like the more human element. I like that it's more about Kirk having to sacrifice his best friend, which is something we'll get into next week when we talk about Kirk, is he is always up for sacrificing himself, but he hates having to sacrifice other people. And that's really the crux of the episode, for me at least, is that Gary Mitchell is his friend, and he doesn't want to have to hurt Gary, even though Gary could hurt everyone. And I think that that's what eventually the needs of the many, even here from the pilot, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. Gary is a threat, and Kirk must man up and get rid of Gary for the sake of the Enterprise and eventually the rest of the galaxy.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think on the whole, The Cage is a better episode. I think kind of the questions which are being asked in that are a bit more interesting than the questions which are being asked in Where No Man Has Gone Before. You know, I can see why Where No Man Has Gone Before would be the one which would sell the show, because it really does do a better job of establishing the characters. Well, especially since, you know, you have the characters who are going to be in the show. But I mean, even beyond that, I think that the scope of the episode does kind of show what Star Trek can do better than The Cage does, because it does have all that thoughtful stuff that's in The Cage, but it also has, you know, the big action. And I think that the pacing is a bit better. You know, the tone is a bit more refined.
Yeah, it seems that Where No Man Has Gone Before finds the balance that the series needed to have between humor, drama, science fiction, relatability, all the kind of things that Roddenberry was wanting to do without being overly preachy or overly obvious as to what he was trying to say. Not like half black, half white people against half white, half black people.
Mm-hmm.
There's no subtlety to that. But this one's got the subtlety that makes you think, but it can also, you know, you could sit your kid in front of it and they're like, ooh, you know, look at the floating cups and the, you know, the guy with the crazy glowy eyes.
Right.
Which I think is, yeah, what eventually gave the original series its start, which is what a pilot should do.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm glad that NBC could see the potential and that Roddenberry's pitch was that good, that they could see the potential even if that episode wasn't exactly what they were looking for. They could tell that with those sets and some of those actors, they could really accomplish what they wanted to accomplish with this show.
Apparently, the initial reaction after seeing The Cage by the studio was like, holy crap, you know, you can actually do this? Like, this is on television? Like, this is insane. From, I guess, a production standpoint, you know, and we look at it now and it looks, you know, rather cheesy because we're used to seeing things like Star Wars and everything like that. But at the time, I guess, just the scale of that show and the idea that it was going to be on television was just kind of mind-boggling to the studio. And I think maybe that, you know, the fact that they were like, this is, you know, I can't believe we did this, and the idea that no one would ever see it, I think that might have been a big factor in them giving Roddenberry another shot.
Let's play a little what if. How about, what do you think the series would have been like had they gone with just with The Cage and said, that's great, keep doing that, you know, Jeffrey Hunter, Majel Barrett, go ahead, do it. What do you think that show would have ended up being like?
You know, that's interesting. That's actually something that I've thought about quite a bit. I think it still would have been good. I think for the most part, it still would have been the same show. But I think giving them the second chance really gave them the opportunity to refine a lot of things. Like, obviously, I don't know, Captain Kirk seems better than Captain Pike. Without a doubt, William Shatner is better than Jeffrey Hunter, although I don't think that Hunter was bad. And obviously, McCoy was better than Philip Boyce. Is that
Boyce? The... Yes.
Yeah. So I do think that what they ended up with was better, but what they had, I think, was pretty good. The big thing to me, the big improvement which was made in Where No Man Has Gone Before, was melding number one's personality with Mr. Spock.
Yes.
You know, making a Vulcan into an unemotional being really makes it stand out. It's no longer just an alien, just some guy who has pointy ears. He now has something which makes him different from the humans. While it's unfortunate that they lost Majel Barrett in particular and a woman on the bridge in general, I do think that creating the character of Spock as we know him today was ultimately very, very beneficial to the series.
Yeah, having Spock is like the through line of all of the franchise. He's the single point of reference in the new movies, even. As bad as it is that he is in the second one, but that's not important right now. We'll get into that.
That could be debated, by the way. Anyway.
Okay.
So what do you think about The Cage as a potential series?
I like the idea. I mean, I think that it would have done well. I think that it would have been maybe more Twilight Zone-y, more... I see it being more anthology, maybe, with that cast. And there's just so many of them. Like, in order to get the Trinity that we have, we would have to have... Would we even have Spock in that group? Or would it just be number one and Boyce and Pike?
I think Spock would have been like a Scotty type of character.
Yeah, I think that would lose something. Though it would be really neat to have the woman be the logical one, because you look at the series later on and it's the 60s, so it's extraordinarily sexist. And having the woman be the voice of reason, I think may have been better. I don't know.
Yeah. I think having a woman as the voice of reason is fine, but I think they kind of went overboard with her, especially for like a human character. When you've got this other guy who's supposed to be different, just sitting there not being different.
Yeah, I guess it does make more sense to meld all the differences into a single character. That way you can have episodes that focus on that character and it be different and not just, well, look at this human doing this human thing, not acting human. I could see that. But I don't know if it would have its lasting quality without the Shatner, DeForest, Nimoy connection. And didn't Hunter die, like, in 1969?
Yeah, he died. Yeah, it was 68 or 69. I think it was 69, yeah.
If he had died, I mean, if Shatner had died in 69, I mean, I don't know if they would have tried a motion picture without... I mean, it's hard enough being like, oh, you can't do Star Trek on the big screen or do Star Trek without, you know, Kirk, like in Next Generation. But like to do Nimoy and DeForest and stuff without Shatner would be completely different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it probably wouldn't have that lasting impact. Now, I mean, it still might have had the rerun resurgence in the 70s. In which case, I think probably what would have happened is something along the lines of what happened with a lot of TV shows from that era, where in, you know, probably would have been earlier for Star Trek, maybe in the 80s, when, you know, Star Wars hit, they probably would have tried just remaking it for the big screen with a different cast, you know? I can't see them not touching it just because their lead was dead. You know, I mean, but I can see them not continuing it in the way that they did today.
They might have had like a phase two kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it would have been more along the lines of a remake instead of a sequel.
And we would have gotten a lot of the same episodes because a lot of them were in production. I don't think they would have retooled the show as much.
No.
So, you know, we would have still gotten Omega Glory and Mudd's Women and stuff. It just would have been Pike and Number One instead of Kirk and Spock.
And it's quite possible that they would have altered Pike's character, quite likely, in fact, that they would have altered Pike's character in the same way that they altered the character to make him Kirk. You know, I think changing the name was rather superficial, but the lessons that they learned from the Cage, they would have taken into the series. And just like, you know, Spock's character changes drastically from the Cage to Where No Man Has Gone Before, I think the difference between Pike and Kirk is relatively small. More the name than anything else, and the actor. Ultimately, I think the character would have been the same.
Well, it's been fun comparing the pilots and dreaming about possibilities, but that's just one of the Trek topics that everybody's been talking about this week on the network. So here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
Looking for Parmok in all the wrong places.
Well, and you also get the feeling here that she's only... Worf really is only being rejected because she's not interested. It has nothing to do with whether or not Worf is Klingon enough or any of that. She's just not interested. She's interested in Quark.
Earl Grey.
The holodeck.
Alexander Rozhenko was conceived on the holodeck.
That's exactly right. In Worf's calisthenics program, with Skeletor watching, because he was just frozen there and he couldn't look away.
The Ready Room.
The Man Trap.
Well, it wasn't what Roddenberry wanted to do with it. It was what the writer George Clayton Johnson wanted to do with it. But it was basically making the character more sympathetic.
To the journey!
The Doctor.
But I love that moment when Chakotay, like, was projecting himself into the room. And, like, he totally, like, kneels down and gets super serious and calm like Chakotay does. He's like, what you've shown us is it's not what you're made of, but what you do or how you feel, you know? Like, he's starting to get like, and like even in like season two, they start to realize the Doctor is not just a hologram. He is becoming something more. Commentary, Trek stars.
Caprica.
Prequels are sort of a constant trap that people end up going to. You know, this thing was successful and it ended. Well, let's go before it ended and tell a different story.
Warp 5.
Klingons on Enterprise.
Having the Klingons at the very beginning of the series running through that field, do you think that was born out of the discomfort that the studio had in the idea of the prequel series to begin with?
Trek News and Views.
The Naked Time.
Gold shirts are easily ripped and disposable.
Yeah.
Blue shirts self-replicate so that they, you know, show no damage. And red shirts whisk away sweat.
Yeah, they're highly absorbent.
There you go.
So that you can't tell that your security guards are nervous.
Literary Treks.
David R. George III, Revelation and Dust.
And it feels like an evolution for Starfleet as well in the way that they built a starbase.
Well, I'm glad that came across because that was sort of one of the things that I was going for. You want it to be an evolution in Starfleet's construction of star bases. Mm-hmm. It should be something brand new. And because it's an important station, because it's in an important location, it really needed to be, I thought, a grand station.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows to get in on the daily Trek talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. Let's tell everyone where to contact us if they'd like to share their thoughts on today's show. They can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. They can choose to send to a show and then choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us. You can use the tab on the right hand of any page on Trek FM to send us voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and other listeners in our forums at trek.fm/forums. You can find the site on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username @trekfm. Now, where can people contact you if they don't necessarily want to contact the whole network?
Well, you can find me on Twitter @comtrackstars, or you can also check out my show on Trek FM, which I do with my co-host Max, Commentary Trek Stars, where we look at the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. Or you can find our other show, Commentary Track Stars Off Topic, which we do on commentarytrackstars.com.
And you can find me on Twitter @005, DOUBLEOFIVE. And you can find me on random episodes of The Ready Room, where we'll talk about, which is our general show, where we talk about episodes and break them down and see what they're made of. You can also find some articles that I've written, overly examination articles on fonts used in the original series, which is I'm still proud of it. I need to update it for Into Darkness because they threw all of my theories out of the window.
Well, we'll have to do an episode on the fonts at some point.
We could do a whole podcast on the fonts.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean like a whole series.
No, I know. Yeah, we'll do that after we do the aspect ratio podcast.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I'm still serious about doing. So
you're still serious about this. Yeah. You may have to keep an eye out for that, Listeners. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor for today's show. Squarespace is the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, website, portfolio, online store, or anything else you can imagine. Create your own space today. Just go to squarespace.com for your free 14-day trial. No credit card required. Then use the offer code TREK10 to save 10%. You're going to love it, and we really thank Squarespace for the support of Standard Orbit and Trek FM. And if you'd like to personally support Standard Orbit, the network, and our programming, visit trek.fm/donate. We have 8 alien-themed badges and art prints as a thank you for your contribution, and you can mix and match badges and art prints. There are different levels of donation to choose from, and your contributions help us cover the cost of production, storage, and bandwidth needed to bring Standard Orbit and our other shows to you every week.
And you can get a pin with a Gorn on it. So why would you not do that?
Everyone needs a pin with a Gorn on it. Put it on your ThinkGeek bag of holding or your hat.
There you go.
So everyone, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landru.
Mr. Chekov, take us out of orbit ahead. Warp factor 1.